Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma. I'm at risk, too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
You're listening to WRGN, 1430 AM, Durand Mondovi, Wabasha, and 107.3 FM at Translator W297CH, Durand.
ABC News, I'm Mark Remillard. President Biden picking up an endorsement from the United Auto Workers Union today. UAW President Sean Fain announcing that at the union's political convention in D.C.
That the UAW is endorsing Joe Biden for President of the United States.
Biden joined UAW workers on the picket line in Michigan during last year's auto workers' strike. Republican Nikki Haley, meanwhile, trying to stay competitive in the race for the Republican nomination. Haley turning her attention to her home state of South Carolina after another loss to former President Trump in last night's New Hampshire primary. Ohio moving to ban gender-affirming care for minors and restrict transgender women's and girls' participation on sports teams. The state's Republican-controlled Senate voting to override a veto of the legislation by Governor Mike DeWine. Jon Stewart returning to The Daily Show as an executive producer and weekly host through this year's election. This is ABC News. Aftershocks rocking western China following Tuesday's magnitude 7.1 earthquake. More than 12,000 people now forced to shelter in tents and also contending with freezing temperatures. An apparent cookie mix-up may have led to the death of a person, and that's prompted a recall and some finger-pointing.
They're labeled vanilla Florentine cookies sold at Stu Leonard grocery store locations in Danbury and Newington, Connecticut in November and December. Stu Leonard says the manufacturer never disclosed that the ingredients contained peanuts. The manufacturer says Stu Leonard's was notified last July of a change in ingredients to include peanuts, alleging the grocery store chain repackaged the cookies and sold them without indicating peanuts on the label. Connecticut's Department of Consumer Protection says a New York resident in their 20s with an apparent peanut allergy ate the cookies at a gathering recently and died. Authorities are investigating. Derek Dennis, ABC News, New York.
The U.S. may soon have a new tallest building. Developers in Oklahoma City want a tower 1,900 feet tall. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la. It's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes, you know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
When something happens to your car, you might say,
no! My car!
But what you really need to say is something that can actually help.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And just like that, State Farm is there to help you file your claim right on the State Farm mobile app. So, just remember, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, I'm Ted Ehlen. In his State of the State address Tuesday night, Governor Tony Evers called Wisconsin's workforce challenges the most significant facing the state. Evers also called for investment in child care, education, and expanded paid family leave. The Republican response to the address had State Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu saying that the state's revenue surplus should go back to taxpayers.
That surplus should not be spent to further grow the size of government, as the governor suggests, or create new entitlement programs, or even sit in a bank account in Madison earning interest. The surplus should be returned to the taxpayers who have given the state government more than their money than is necessary.
Earlier in the day, a new tax cut package was introduced by Republicans in the Wisconsin legislature to use $2.1 billion of the state surplus. State Senate Republicans on Tuesday approved a revised version of Governor Evers' proposed legislative maps.
The changes avoid placing Republican incumbents in the same district running against each other. The tweaked maps passed on a 17-14 vote. Minority Leader Dianne Hesselbein dismissed the plan as incumbent protection in an interview with WisPolitics. Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu defended what he called minor changes to undo what he said was Evers' attempt to target Republican incumbents. Bob Haig, Wisconsin Radio Network.
It's more information on a death that Green Bay police deemed suspicious. Police have identified the man whose body was found lying in the snow in a business parking lot on the city's east side Saturday morning. It's 19-year-old Alejandro Morales Morales of Black Creek. Though the death is still considered suspicious, police say an initial investigation doesn't indicate that foul play was a factor. Morales Morales was reported missing by family earlier in the morning prior to the discovery of his body. You're listening to Wisconsin Radio Network News.
Every tractor owner knows that support and service after the sale is what makes a good tractor company great. That's what you can count on from LS Tractor. An extensive dealer network gives you convenient access to genuine LS Tractor factory parts and factory-trained technicians, keeping you in the tractor, not in the waiting room. Schedule your service with Synergy Co-op, your LS Tractor certified service center. LS Tractor, simply more.
Customer.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Cloudy and mild today as high temperatures spike to the upper 30s. With this warmth over the current snowpack, we're seeing patchy, dense fog at times. By tonight, there's a small chance of some light freezing rain, which could create some slick and slippery spots for tomorrow morning's commute. Looking for a great place to live, stay, shop, and play? It's easy to get to Worthington, Minnesota, and it's worth a look. Right now, 34 degrees.
this entire Chevron deference and some of the possible leanings here of the Supreme Court, it just seems to me that there's a chance here, if the doctrine completely goes away, to return more power possibly to Congress and the courts instead of letting certain agencies, you know, kind of run the law, so to speak, and basically just return agencies to enforcing the law. That's what it kind of seems to me. Is that kind of what you're feeling here, Jeff?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the big discussion and oral argument last week at the Supreme Court about this, is really who is supposed to interpret this. And there were some justices who said, well, is this really courts making policy? But there were others that pointed out, which I think was correct, that really Congress sets what the agency can do. If they don't say that the agency can do something, then there shouldn't be an assumption that the agency can do it, because Congress is the one who makes the laws. And oftentimes, with the Chevron deference, you see the agencies upsetting or going against the congressional policy. And I do think that there is, it's always hard to predict about what the Supreme Court will do based on oral argument.
Sure.
But even those that were sympathetic to Chevron recognize that there should be a greater role in courts interpreting the statutes. It shouldn't just be an easy way out of cases. If they are going to find ambiguity in a statute, then they really have to do the work to get there. And so I think even if Chevron's not totally overturned, we are going to see probably less deference to agencies, because courts will hopefully go through a very rigorous analysis of what the statute says, rather than just saying, throwing their hands up and saying, whatever, just go with what the agency says.
Well, with that, Jeff McCoy with Pacific Legal Foundation. Jeff, thanks for joining us and telling us more about the Chevron deference and where things stand. We appreciate the time.
Thank you so much.
All right, coming up next here on AOA, we're going to have a conversation with South Dakota Senator John Thune. He joins us on the way right after this. Heading to NCBA's Cattle Convention on Friday, February 2nd. Stop by USMEF booth 1807 with me, Jesse Allen. We'll be broadcasting AOA live with our friends from the National Corn Growers Association and the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Stop by from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern to learn how these organizations work together to competitively position American product as the sustainable, high-quality, premier product of choice. And don't forget to join NCGA on Thursday at 2:30 for their Learning Lounge. We'll see you in Orlando.
Are you heading to NCBA in Orlando? On Thursday, February 1st, stop by Christian Hansen booth 1067 for some exciting live radio. Celebrity host Jesse Allen will be broadcasting AOA live from Christian Hansen booth 1067 from 10 to 11 a.m. Also on Friday at 11:30 in the Learning Lounge, Jesse Allen will be hosting Christian Hansen's discussion on how daily feeding of probiotics can improve the digestibility and utilization of the forages cattle are consuming.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for it.
Stay clean and dry while doing chores around the farm with waterproof gear from UtterTech. From waterproof bibbed overalls, aprons, pouches, jackets, and more, UtterTech has the workwear to keep you clean, dry, and working efficiently on the farm. Just machine wash and dry, and your UtterTech workwear is ready to go for the next day. UtterTech has products for veterinarians, poultry, swine, goat farmers, and even kids, too. See all the UtterTech products designed to help you on the farm at UtterTechInc.com.
Compeer Financial helped us get into our forever home.
They helped me expand more than acreage.
And helped our dairy grow for the next generation.
At Compeer Financial, we see potential in every plan. Our unique perspective finds solutions to your challenges. And our specially trained financial team guides you every step of the way. Partner with us to make your goals possible. Compeer.com. Compeer Financial ACA is an equal opportunity lender and equal opportunity provider. And MLS number 619731, copyright 2019, all rights reserved.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now for a conversation, South Dakota Senator John Thune. And Senator Thune, thanks for joining us on AOA today. I know things are busy in Washington, D.C., but appreciate the time. Hope you're doing well.
Indeed, we are, and we're just staying after it. Always good to talk to you. Thanks, Jesse.
Well, let's start with an update on where the appropriations process stands. I know, of course, we extended our deadlines here and had another continuing resolution to keep the government open, and now we're looking at March as our target, looking to give us a little more time to try and get business done. What's the latest on that front, Senator?
Well, that is, you know, we're operating, as you said, on a short-term spending resolution. We have now until March. We should be every day in the United States Senate taking up individual appropriation bills. We are not. The leader in the Senate, the Democrat leader, Chuck Schumer, has opted not to put bills on the floor, and which is really unfortunate because we need a regular appropriations bills if we're going to do these, the funding of the government and make sure using taxpayer dollars wisely and well, we need to have the accountability that comes with moving these bills individually. And too often of late, what happens is, and I think, again, this is by design in many respects by the Democrat leader, is he lets them all pile up at the end and then forces everybody to vote on a big, you know, combines all the bills into one, groups them into one, and forces people to take or to leave it. That's not the way to do these. There are 12 individual appropriation bills. They were reported out of the Senate Appropriations Committee back in June and July. In fact, the last one came out July 27th. We actually did three of them on the floor in the month of October. But since November 1, Schumer has yet to bring up another single appropriations bill. So we are continuing to operate on these continuing resolutions. It's a terrible way to, you know, to fund the government. It's a terrible way to run the government. And here we are fully into this fiscal year, and most of the funding issues have been left unresolved, unfortunately, because of the way that he's managing the Senate.
You bring up a great point, and I think a lot of folks in farm country and rural America across the country are getting a little frustrated with some of these politics that are happening, trying to keep this government funded, because you mentioned we're already into the fiscal year. I mean, these are things that this should have been done. And to your point about Senate Leader Schumer, you know, the way he's running things, we're seeing similar issues on the House side as well, I feel like. I just feel like there's a lot of frustration out there across the country right now, and you may be hearing some of that as well, Senator Thune.
I think people want to see results in the end. They understand, you know, politics, and there's a certain amount of that in anything we do around here. But unfortunately, when it gets in the way of actually getting results and getting outcomes for the American people, that's what I think raises people's frustration level. And that's unfortunately, like I said, where we are. And I just think that if we get the majority back, if the Republicans get the majority in the Senate, we're gonna do things entirely differently, because this model of how to, you know, run a government, how to fund a government is broken. And the fact that we are fully four months into the new fiscal year and still haven't funded the government for this year, let alone getting started on the funding for next year, which is what we should be working on right now, is just a really poor reflection on the Senate and the leadership of the Senate, which again comes back to Senator Schumer. I mean, he makes the calls, he sets the agenda. That's what the Democrat leader or the leader, whoever the leader is in the Senate, Republican or Democrat, does. They set the agenda. And so the fact that we're sitting around and not doing appropriations work when we've got these funding deadlines sitting out there now, they've been pushed back to March, but we're going to be up against them here any time. And I've always felt like that Senator Schumer likes to pile up at the end and then force everybody to vote for one big combined spending bill where you don't have the opportunity for people to have their voices heard through an amendment process or regular order which is the way in which a lot of these appropriations bills ought to be considered. So it's incredibly frustrating, that's the hand we've been dealt until hopefully a year from now we're in the majority, but we'll see how all that goes.
I know, too, a new farm bill obviously is caught up in everything that is going on. I know we got the extension of the 2018 legislation, and a lot of groups in farm country are hoping that something is done in terms of a new farm bill. Obviously, we got to get the appropriations process figured out first, but your thoughts on the prospects of a farm bill here if we can get something done as far as funding the government?
Right. The farm bill expired at the end of the fiscal year in 2023, which was September 30th. So we ended up extending the current farm bill into the end of this fiscal year now in 2024, so September 30th. But, you know, we need to get a five-year bill in place. People, farmers, ranchers, people in production agriculture need certainty. And you can't just operate on extensions of the existing bill. You know, it's time for a reset. Things have changed. You got way higher input costs, fuel, fertilizer. Interest rates are significantly higher. So the average farm loan out there, they're paying a lot more in servicing that debt. And then you got weakening commodity prices. So we need attention to that and to making sure that we have good policies in place. And that stalled out as well, again, over differences in priorities. The chair of the committee, the Democrat chair, Debbie Stab now from Michigan, so far has been unwilling to consider moving resources around within the farm bill in order to strengthen the producer safety net. And we think that that should be the focus of the farm bill. Farm bill ought to be about farmers. And unfortunately, too often, the Democrats here, at least in the Senate, are making it about issues like, you know, climate, environmental policy, the nutrition title, which, by the way, that was plussed up $250 billion by just administrative waving the magic wand at USDA without any input from the Congress, and which we think is not the right way to go about doing this. You know, Congress needs to be heard from. We need to put the policies in place and allocate the resources in a way that reflects not only, you know, obviously taking care of important titles in the farm bill like the nutrition title, but mm-hmm. with a clear-eyed focus on what really matters, and that is the safety net components for our farmers and ranchers.
You brought up USDA as well, and I know Ag Secretary Vilsack has mentioned using some Commodity Credit Corporation funds to try and help figure out a new farm bill and provide some funding from that pot. Do you agree with that, though? I know some folks have said that could be a quote-unquote magic bullet. Do you agree with maybe using some CCC funds?
Well, I think, you know, you shouldn't need to use CCC funds. Those are set aside for a specific purpose. I hate to start doing that for something that's a normal thing we ought to be doing. We do a farm bill every 4 or 5 years. And, I think my view in the farm bill, we ought to be working on making crop insurance more accessible, more affordable. We ought to be strengthening the ARC program, the PLC program, the complements to crop insurance as part of the safety net. And, you know, when you're spending $1.5 trillion, which is what this farm bill is going to cost, you would think there'd be some give and take when it comes to meaningfully funding the farm safety net and other components of the farm bill. And be able to find, as we have in the past, a bipartisan path forward. But, you know, and you can do that within, you know, just by moving resources around within the farm bill. So, you know, we're open to suggestions that are being made about how to find resources to do some things in the commodity title of the farm bill, but that shouldn't be necessary. There's a way of doing this where you can just pull some of the savings. You know, they passed the Inflation Reduction Act. They had $20 billion in that for climate. There's 10 to 15 billion of that that's still available, but they won't let go of it. And we think that should be dollars that we are using to prioritize the commodity title of the farm bill and other important pieces of the farm bill that impact farmers and ranchers and production agriculture. And so far, we're running into, you know, a lot of resistance from the Democrats on the committee.
Senator Thune, real quick before we run out of time, I know you joined with Senator Rounds from South Dakota this week, asking the USTR to start updating trade agreements for the potential usage of a HPAI vaccine. Talk about the importance of that.
Right. So, you know, that we've had the outbreaks had some devastating effects in South Dakota. We've lost, you know, more than 5 million birds in our state alone. And if you look at nationally, it's $1 billion worth of indemnities. And so last week, Senator Rounds and I sent a letter to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack and the U.S. trade rep or trade ambassador Catherine Tai, expressing support for the potential usage of a HPAI vaccine to address the current outbreak and future incidences. So we're hoping we'll get a favorable affirmative response from the administration, that they'll work proactively with us to resolve some of the potential trade disputes related to the use of that vaccine and to support, you know, more robust research in surveillance, because it's an issue that's not going away.
Well, with that, we appreciate the time. South Dakota Senator John Thune, thanks for joining us on AOA. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jesse. Talk to you. Bye now.
We'll be back with more on AOA on the way right after this.
Are you heading to NCBA in Orlando? On Thursday, February 1st, stop by Christian Hansen booth 1067 for some exciting live radio. Celebrity host Jesse Allen will be broadcasting AOA live from Christian Hansen booth 1067 from 10 to 11 a.m. Also on Friday at 11:30 in the Learning Lounge, Jesse Allen will be hosting Christian Hansen's discussion on how daily feeding of probiotics can improve the digestibility and utilization of the forages cattle are consuming.
Heading to NCBA's Cattle Convention? On Friday, February 2nd, stop by USMEF booth 1807 with me, Jesse Allen. We'll be broadcasting AOA live with our friends from the National Corn Growers Association and the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Stop by from 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern to learn how these organizations work together to competitively position American product as the sustainable, high-quality, premier product of choice. And don't forget to join NCGA on Thursday at 2:30 for their Learning Lounge. We'll see you in Orlando.
Looking to upgrade the home appliances? Elsevia Co-op Heating and Cooling features gas and electric ranges, refrigerators, freezers, washers, and dryers from General Electric and Speed Queen. If you need an appliance repair, Elsevia Co-op Heating and Cooling can service all major appliances. Call Elsevia Co-op and ask for Jody Feedy. She'll help you with all of your home appliance needs. Elsevia Co-op, your GE and Speed Queen appliance dealer, Durand.
Milk markets were lower with this WRDN market update. I'm Brian Winnikins. At the Mercantile Exchange, February milk down 8 to 1562, March down 2 to 1595, April down 15 to 1648, May milk down 20 to 1710. Meanwhile, live cattle markets, feeder cattle markets, and hogs all continue to move mostly higher as demand continues to remain strong this week in the countryside, and along with extra optimism about strong demand for more pork exported to China as they cull down its sow herd. February live cattle up 70 cents to 175.35. January feeder cattle up 82 cents to 231.82. February hogs up 60 cents to 73.90. A quiet Wednesday with little in the way of market moving news. Corn, soybeans, and wheat all continued with their mild recovery from multi-month lows. Soybeans and soy products traded mixed in an even slower trade. A sharp plunge in ethanol production last week related to the weather, though, failed to get a bearish response in the corn market. March corn up 5 3/4 to 452 and a quarter. New crop up 4 3/4 to 482 and a quarter. March beans up up 3/4 to 1240 and a quarter. New crop up 1 to 1208. March wheat in Chicago up 14 and a quarter to 610 and 3/4. May up 13 and a half to 620 and a quarter. March wheat in Minneapolis up 5.5 to 704 and a half. With markets, I'm Brian Winnekins. Join Security Financial Bank for the 4th Annual Chippewa Valley Agriculture Conference, February 22nd at Florian Gardens in Eau Claire. Come gather strategies developed specifically for local agriculture producers, from knowing your numbers to application drones. The Chippewa Valley Agriculture Conference has something for everyone. Call 715-672-2412 or visit sfbank.com for more information. SFB, an equal housing lender. Member FDIC. Hey, Wisconsin soybean farmers. Do you know how your soybean checkoff helps fuel Wisconsin? Soybeans play a critical role in helping our communities, our economy, our environment, our future, our farms, and our world. Stop by the Wisconsin Soybean Booth at this year's Corn Soybean Expo, February 1st and 2nd at the Kalahari in Wisconsin Dells, to learn how your Wisconsin soybean farmers and soybean checkoff are working hard to increase your impact from the farm to the future.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need. AOA. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Well, joining us now on the program, we want to take a look at a new report out from CoBank and their Knowledge Exchange, looking at the dairy industry specifically. And joining us to talk about it, author of the report, he is the lead dairy economist with CoBank. Corey Geiger is with us here today. Corey, it's good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us on the program. Hope you're doing well.
Jesse, look forward to talking dairy with you.
Well, let's dive in, and I want to get a little background on the new report. We're looking at the benefits for the dairy industry, the adoption of genomics, and the impact it's having on sustainability. That's one of the big backgrounds, it looked like, to your report. Can you give us just kind of the 1,000-foot view of the new report out on the Knowledge Exchange?
Mm-hmm. I think within dairy circles, and certainly among geneticists, we are really good about talking about genomics, but probably don't talk about that as well with the greater community around us. The dairy cow is the most studied animal, domestic animal on the planet. And by taking a DNA sample, you know, the root ball, getting the DNA snips, we can compare a newborn calf really to the overall population and know with 70% accuracy what that calf will do as a cow 2 years later. It's an incredible science, and it's really changing dairy tremendously.
Well, and thinking about those changes in dairy and just all the benefits, I mean, I feel like as we move forward and look at sustainability and the efficiency of our dairy herds, there are so many benefits to looking at different ways to be efficient on our operations, isn't it?
It certainly is. And genomics goes so far beyond the production traits. That's probably the easiest thing to quantify. But we're making cows that are breeding cows that are longer lived. We're breeding healthier cows. And so we're using traditional breeding tools, but throwing in the DNA science of it, studying a genome. You know, a lot of viewers certainly have heard of Ancestry and all the work that's being done on finding relatives and all that. This is the same science that we're doing, except we're using it on cows.
Well, and thinking about, you know, producing more milk, more butter fat, more protein with fewer resources, that speaks to the heart of, you know, sustainability and sustainable dairy production. What are you seeing in terms of some of the, are we already seeing various market impacts potentially from developing, you know, our genomics and seeing some of this already in the dairy industry? Are we having any sort of wide-ranging impacts on the markets overall in dairy right now?
Mm-hmm. So dairy farmers are adopting this at various rates, but there's two things that are taking place. So since about the science was introduced in 2008, it was a little slow to take off, but now it's running by gangbusters. So the number one thing, most of the cows in the United States and heifers too are bred via artificial insemination. So the bulls that are being selected, you know, prior to genomics, we were increasing at about $36 a year genetic gain, and that's leapfrogged to 83. So big jump there. So that's just from the sire or dad side. Then you got the what's taking place in the cows. And about 20 to 25% of the animals, the newborn calves in this country, are getting tested on an annual basis. So that's one part of it. Prior to genomics, our genetic gain on butterfat pounds was running about 0.5% a year. And that's nearly tripled to 1.75% on butterfat. And the protein story is about the same. It's doubled. So we are we're just being so much more accurate in what we're doing. It is one of the big outcomes of that.
I know something too. As I was looking through the report, you talked a little bit about some of the indexes that track genetic progress. I know one of those is the Net Merit Index. For folks who maybe are unaware of what that is, can you talk about that and maybe what some of the data from that index has shown in terms of genetics and genetic selection?
Mm-hmm. So the Net Merit Index is a really good index because it puts it on U.S. dollars. So it bundles in like 40 traits into one index. So it's a good barometer of breeding and progress in the genetic capability of animals. So one of the big components is production, of course. And then there's a bundle of health traits ranging from somatic cell count, which is an indicator of one of the large, you know, cows get mastitis. But there's other diseases out there. Then there's longevity, how long the cow will live. And then some newer traits like this feed saved trait, which means some cows convert feed to milk more efficiently than others. And that's really one of the sustainability traits that's new to that bundle. So it puts it all together. And in the United States, we started recording production on cows way back in 1895. Now that built over time. Then in the 1950s, we were able to cryogenically freeze semen. So you could freeze bull semen and unthought 50 years later, and it'll still result in heifer calf. So you had those two things. We started progeny testing animals, which meant we would compare daughters from one bull versus the others. And then we've come along here to the genomic side of the equation, which is a dynamic science. So all this is built on each other. And the power of genomics is not the DNA. The power of genomics in the United States is the 123 million dairy cow records in the system that we can take one animal and compare it against the whole population. And that is the super fuel for this.
Well, I know folks can read through the full report that you authored on the Knowledge Exchange, cobank.com, and just find the Knowledge Exchange tab. You can learn more there. Corey, I should ask you while we have you on with us here today, just your overall thoughts, kind of an economic view of the dairy market in general here as we begin a new year, 2024. I know dairy producers have had their ups and downs here in recent years in terms of price action and more and things like that. Just what are your thoughts on this overall dairy market picture from your economist standpoint as we begin 2024? What should folks be watching for and keep in mind right now?
Yeah, there's a number of factors here. And certainly we talk about what's happening on a milk check and then what's happening on the feed side of the equation. So, you know, corn is a commodity a lot of cows eat. That's down about $2 per bushel compared to the same time last year. And soybean meal is dropping. So on the feed side, that's a good part for dairy farmers. But milk checks, we're looking about the same as we did last year. Now, drilling a little deeper, the class four markets, which are butter powder. So a lot of those are West Coast markets, especially in the Western California, Washington, and Oregon. Those prices are trending higher by $2 to $4 per hundredweight this spring. And class three is down. Class three's typically been a leader. So those in markets that make a lot, produce milk that goes to cheese, spring's going to be a little soft. Now, the second half of the year looks like it could rebound rather well. One other interesting market development in 2023, so 92% of the milk in the U.S. is priced on multiple component pricing. So we're really interested in what's the solids in the milk, not the water. And so butterfat and protein are the two biggest components. And in 2023, butterfat led, and it looks like it'll lead again this year. So if people, consumers, are buying full-fat dairy products because they taste good, and quite frankly, the saturated fats in them have been proven to be healthy for you. This, you know, that's a big reversal on the science, Jesse.
Well, Corey, another thought too, with the overall economic picture that we have right now in the U.S., is there any concern about consumer demand and retail demand for dairy products here as we begin 2024 from your perspective?
Mm-hmm. So for dairy, domestic consumption has been growing, and even this past year it has. Now, there's been a little dip here, I think part of it in late in the fall and early winter. There's, you know, the student forgiveness program on loan debt came off the books, and so people are rebalancing their budgets. We've seen a little bit of that, but domestic dairy consumption and animal protein has been pretty strong here and should continue. The U.S. these days, though, are exporting about 16 to 18% of the milk production in the form of dairy products. And exports have been a little soft because the U.S. economy has been doing rather well, but international economies have not, especially in the Southeast Asia and China. One factor here is that China's gross domestic product is slid back to about 64% of that compared to the U.S. And at its height, about right before pandemic started in 2021, it was 75%. So China buys 20% of the internationally traded dairy products. So if China backs off, it kind of changes everything.
Definitely. Well, and that's the case, not only in dairy, but in a lot of our grain and livestock markets, it seems. Good thoughts on what's happening in the dairy industry of the markets right now. And again, new report out from Cobank's Knowledge Exchange. You can read through Corey's Dairy Cattle Genomics Quietly Improving Sustainability report. Just go to cobank.com and look for it under the Knowledge Exchange tab. With that, Corey Geiger with Cobank, their lead dairy economist. Corey, thanks for joining us today on the show. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again soon.
Take care, Jesse.
And once again, Corey Geiger there, lead dairy economist at Cobank. Appreciate him making the time to join us here today on AOA. Coming up next, we're going to take a look at a few news headlines, including the challenge to overturn Proposition 12. We're going to hear comments from California Assembly Republican leader James Gallagher. Also, every day inching towards another farm bill delay. Some comments from Cassandra Kubal with the Tory Advisory Group. We'll get to those headline stories and more. Coming up next, back with more on AOA right after the break.
You're all set with your Medicare prescriptions, Mrs. Brown.
This is not just low-cost copays at Walgreens.
I can actually help you set up 90-day refills if you want.
This is having a partner you can trust. Get low-cost copays, 90-day refills, and delivery from your neighborhood Walgreens. This is being independent, together. Walgreens.
Restrictions apply. For details, see walgreens.com/pharmacy.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
This year, wouldn't it be great to stop dealing with thin, brittle, shedding hair and instead have the thick, healthy, gorgeous hair you've always wanted? Well, now you can by using Hair Volume from New Nordic. Hair Volume is one of many award-winning natural health products from New Nordic, the number one supplier of dietary supplements in Scandinavia. Available in tablet or delicious gummy, Hair Volume is the all-natural solution trusted by millions of women around the world to say goodbye to thin, brittle, shedding hair.
That's because Hair Volume contains a proprietary formula, including apple extract, which is clinically proven to promote thicker and healthier hair. You don't need to feel embarrassed by thinning hair. You don't need to keep dealing with shedding. All you need is daily Hair Volume tablets or gummies to start looking and feeling your best. Look for Hair Volume at your local Walgreens and CVS or online at Amazon.com or NewNordicUSA.com. Go to NewNordicUSA.com, Amazon, or ask for Hair Volume at your local Walgreens or CVS.
'67 for some exciting live radio. Celebrity host Jesse Allen will be broadcasting AOA live from Christian Hansen booth 1067 from 10 to 11 a.m. Also on Friday at 11:30 in the Learning Lounge, Jesse Allen will be hosting Christian Hansen's discussion on how daily feeding of probiotics can improve the digestibility and utilization of the forages cattle are consuming.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted car to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your car donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
Trains are everywhere. You should always expect one, even on private property. Only cross tracks at designated crossings that fit your equipment. If you don't fit, don't commit. Whatever you're operating, secure your load, raise your equipment, and avoid getting stuck or causing damage. Minimize distractions. Remember, noisy equipment drowns out the sound of a train. Unless you're crossing, always keep a safe distance from train tracks. Look, listen, live. For more info, go to oli.org.
When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA. Well, California's Proposition 12, which has national and international impacts, will take a lot of work to overturn. California Assembly Republican leader James Gallagher explains how that would take place.
It would have to go back to the voters. So even if we in the legislature did it, would have to go back to the voters. I think it's definitely worth consideration, something to look at. Hey, can we tweak this in a way, or you know, at least reform this in a way that actually is workable?
Gallagher says at minimum, the law should be tweaked to not penalize out-of-state farmers.
I'm tired of our own farmers getting penalized in California. We've been fighting back against that. But now when you're like hurting farmers in other states, and at the end of the day, you're hurting the consumer. I think that's what we really got to drive home is like now we're hurting consumers and the availability of food at a reasonable price to those consumers. I think really kind of driving home that message and talking to people throughout California, that could have an effect that we could, you know, maybe make change there and create a better policy, but it's a heavy burden.
And Gallagher says the U.S. Supreme Court got the ruling wrong.
I really wish the Supreme Court would have decided that case in the way that I think they should have. This is clearly discrimination between states. A state has the ability to pass policy for its own state, but it can't, in effect, pass policy in other states. Unfortunately, that's not how it came out. So I think, one, we do need to try and see if we can maybe get that back up to the Supreme Court and get it hopefully overturned. But then in the meantime, yeah, each state, I think, working in its own way to help people understand these policies really impact food, that they really impact the ability of farmers to get you nutritious food at a reasonable cost.
And once again, that is California Assembly Republican Leader James Gallagher. Well, of course, each passing day means getting a farm bill passed is a bigger challenge. Cassandra Kubal, Tory Advisory Group Vice President, says election years mean challenges for any legislation.
Presidential election year, I think that's the key. Presidential always makes it tough for policy making, but we add on a unique thing, I think, right now with this current Congress, is we are working with slim majorities in both the Senate, which is Democrat-controlled, and the House, which is Republican-controlled. That adds another unique element that makes a little bit harder to pass any legislation.
Kubal says the clock is ticking to get a farm bill completed.
I think each day when we see no progress of it coming forward, going through the motions it needs to go through, I should say, before being introduced, whether in the House or Senate, and we are anticipating it'll first be brought to the floor in the House, is a sign that it's going to be harder and harder in election year to bring it forward.
There is still hope lawmakers will complete the bill this year, and she encourages farmers and ranchers to engage with their legislators on the issue.
I think we are witnessing, we hear this from the leadership in Congress, that they still intend to bring it forward this year, and I think they need to stay positive with that, and it's a way to ensure that we're still engaging on the farm bill. Nothing's officially done and closed. So this is a reminder to the ag community, you need to still get out there and talk about the importance of what matters to you with that farm bill, despite whether or not it's taken up this year or gets kicked to next year.
And once again, that is Tory Advisory Group Vice President Cassandra Kubal. Well, the EPA plans to limit pollution runoff from at least some meatpacking plants and launched a formal 60-day public comment period on Tuesday for a proposed rule that provides three different options. Even before the posting of the rule on the Federal Register, environmental groups were calling Monday for the agency to implement the most stringent of those rules. The EPA announced its preferred option is to strengthen effluent limitations created in 1974 and 2004 to control nitrogen and for the first time to limit phosphorus discharges. EPA said on its website, quote, the preferred regulatory option would also establish for the first time pretreatment standards for indirect discharging facilities to control the pollutants, oil and grease, total suspended solids and biochemical oxygen demand, end quote. Now, they also added, quote, the preferred regulatory option would apply to approximately 850 of the 5,000 meatpacking plant facilities nationwide, end quote. Now, two additional options proposed by EPA would apply effluent limits on direct discharges from meatpacking plants as well as pretreatment standards on facilities that indirectly discharge pollutants. According to the EPA analysis of the proposal, the total direct and indirect annual costs of the rule to meatpacking companies range from $210.3 million to about $1.1 billion. The EPA proposal would result in cutting nitrogen pollution from some of the largest meat processing plants in the country. Now, for example, John Morrell and Company's pork processing plant in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, along the Big Sioux River, releases about 867,000 pounds of nitrogen annually, according to information from the Environmental Integrity Project. The EPA proposal would cut that pollution by about 92%, according to EIP. Now, the EPA released a proposal back in December, and one meatpacking industry group expressed general support for what the agency proposed. Chris Young, executive director of the American Association of Meat Processors, said in a December statement that his group was encouraged by the work the EPA had conducted on the proposal. However, he said the EPA should have gathered more data before issuing the proposal. Now, the EPA's latest proposal came about after a coalition of environmental groups sued the agency in 2019 and 2022. Now, EPA has scheduled two public hearings on the proposals. The first, an online hearing scheduled here for Wednesday. A second slated for January 31st at EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C. You can find more details on this story with our partners from DTN Progressive Farmer and the author of that story, DTN staff reporter Todd Neely. Just go to dtnpf.com to find the full article. Well, also, as we wrap things up here on today's program, we are watching Apple demand in India. They could not be any happier about once again exporting apples to India, but Washington apple growers know there's still plenty of work left to build back what used to be our number two market. Washington Apple Commission President Todd Fryhofer says September lifting of Section 232 tariffs on U.S. apple imports to India was a huge relief.
So we were at the same duty as all other origins, and that spurred on the additional interest in exports, but and then the larger crops. So we've got two bonuses going that have perpetuated itself into a rather dramatic increase in shipments this season versus last into India.
But Fryhofer says regaining the market we had prior to the tariff shutting down our access to India will take some time.
Certainly, India was not lacking for apples during that process. So we have a lot of work at the Apple Commission to build back that brand awareness. And it'll certainly take a number of years before we feel comfortable in that process.
And exports this year, Fryhofer says, are doing better than what was a down year in 2023 with both Mexico and Canada, our number one and two markets, taking up some of the slack. Well, we're out of time here today on AOA. Coming up on our next program, we'll have a conversation with the CEO of NASDA, Ted McKinney. We'll talk markets as well with Tyler Schau from AgMarket.net. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day. Every Tuesday, we're sitting around the table, sponsored by CHS, where we'll be talking with folks from throughout the cooperative system. Join us as we discover what makes cooperatives unique when there are more options to do business than ever before. We'll learn how farmers and ranchers like you benefit from a system where decisions are made by the members that own it. Tune in every Tuesday for Around the Table, or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
National FFA Week is February 17th through the 24th, a week set aside for FFA students across the country to share how FFA impacts members every day. I'm National FFA Secretary Grant Norfleet from Missouri. What better way to show your support of FFA than to get involved in FFA Week? Whether it's in person, on the phone, or via social media, be sure to share your FFA stories during hashtag FFA Week, February 17th through the 24th.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is...
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force.